Comparison is the thief of joy. We all know that quote. In this industry, it's alive and well, but I try to look at the things that I have that make me special, and that's what I ride on. That's what I feed myself.
Hi, this is Daphne, and welcome to episode 12 of the Creativity Habit Podcast, conversations about art, creativity, and courage with artists, creatives, and makers. My guest today didn't start dancing until he was 12 years old, which is very late for an up-and-coming professional ballet and modern dancer. He's a graduate of the Ailey Fordham BFA program, and he's danced with the Washington National Ballet, Ailey 2, and the Metropolitan Opera Ballet, to name a few. He is Antoine Byers, and you can find him over at antoinebyers.com. In this interview, we talk about breakdowns, emotional and physical, and how not to let them break you down, how to create and maintain your own self-esteem, especially when in a very competitive environment, dance as a tool for social change, a typical day in the world of a professional dancer, and Antoine's personal journey from a young kid in Dallas, Texas, to a professional dancer on national and international stages. May you enjoy this conversation and may it inspire you to make your thing and change your world. Welcome, Antoine, to the Creativity Habit Podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
Well, I'm very excited to have you. And we're going to start with how art, dance, or just creativity showed up for you as a little boy.
Well, I wouldn't say it showed up as a little boy. I started relatively late in the dance world. I started when I was 12 years old. And, you know, throughout elementary school and middle school and high school, I was always interested in fine arts at school. I took music classes and theater classes, and actually dance was the last class that I took. I was in one of the programs at a local theater in Dallas called the Black Academy of Arts and Letters. They had a summer enrichment program, and we put on musicals every summer, and we had to take intensive classes in all three of those things, dance, music, and theater. Dance stole my heart once I start doing it. You know, I met my first teacher, Derek Whiters, who was a former dancer with the Ailey Company. Since then, dance is the only thing that I felt so passionately about. You know, I appreciate all the other arts, but dance is definitely my favorite. So that was my first introduction. And then I started taking more classes locally in Dallas and then eventually around the country.
So you started, though, like you were drawn to the arts because you went to, it sounds like you went to a school specifically for the arts.
Yes. My high school, Booker T. Washington High School for the Performing Visual Arts, it's the arts magnet in Dallas, Texas. There we had four different clusters. We had music, theater, dance, and visual arts. So that was in high school. I started when I was 12, and then I auditioned when I was 16, actually, for music. Fun fact, I used to sing, and I thought that I was so much better at singing, but apparently not. I re-auditioned my sophomore year, and then I was accepted as a dancer. But yes. Very proud to have been to Booker T. Washington.
And was that something, the art, the creativity, theater, music, all of that, was that encouraged in your family? It sounds like it was.
You know, I grew up in the church, so I was always a part of the, you know, children's choir. We had like a drill team, which was kind of a step team within our church. I was a part of that, and I was choreographing drills and steps before I even knew it was choreographing. So it was encouraged in that way, and my parents have always been so supportive. Whenever I wanted to start dance, I didn't have to ask twice. They were very supportive. They made sure that I had all the necessary supplies and clothing that I needed and the transportation to get to and from the studio and performances. I don't think they necessarily fully understood it just because I was the first major dancer in our family, but they were definitely very supportive of it.
Did you feel as a boy, like, how did you feel in terms of dancing? Because this is something I've thought about a lot. As boys who love dancing, as they get a little older, sometimes they'll leave dancing because it's considered more of a girl's thing or they might be made fun of. Did you have any of that when you started to get into dance?
I'm sure it was there, but no one ever said it directly to me. But I definitely know exactly what you're talking about. I mean, when I came up in a lot of my studios in Dallas, I was the only boy and also the only person of color or the only boy of color at different studios that I trained at. That, for me, in a subconscious way, it was definitely, you know, brewing in my brain, but that's definitely a misconception about dance, is that it's a girly thing or something that's more feminine, because some of the men that I know that are dancers that I dance with, whether it be at the Met or within the ALEE organization or within the whole dance field, it takes a lot of, I guess, what you call manly energy to do it. It's very athletic. We're partnering and dancing with women all day. So you have to really be in top-notch shape, just as other athletes do in other athletic forms. That's definitely, like you said, it's a misconception, but dancers are incredibly strong, both the women and men.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. I mean, your bodies are seriously works of art. There's just all muscle. So you started in middle school and then saw that when you were 15, as a sophomore in high school, you were awarded a scholarship to a 6-week dance intensive in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And at the time, you had written a thank you letter, I believe. And at the time you said, "I must admit I was extremely nervous. I was in a new city with new people, and this was my first intensive away from home. So I was definitely outside my comfort zone." What did you learn about yourself that first time away from home?
You know, I've been to a lot of different summer intensives, but Point Park in Pittsburgh was my first one, like you said, away from home. And like I said, I started late to dance, so I didn't even know that all this stuff existed and was possible, you know? So I randomly auditioned for the Dance Council of North Texas. They had a scholarship, and they've been very supportive of me throughout my career, which I'm very grateful for them. But I auditioned on a whim, got in, got the scholarship, and being there for 6 weeks with people that dance, like that's what they wanted to do, I hadn't really been surrounded by people like that, because you know, that was like right after I got to Booker T. So I had that at school. But I mean, these were people who were coming from around the world. It was an international dance intensive. They were coming from around the world to train and better themselves as artists and dancers. So I think that was the first time for me that I really knew that this was A, possible, and B, what I wanted to do. So that really shifted my focus. At that intensive, I took lots of new classes. I usually trained in like ballet and modern back in Dallas. And eventually, you know, I expanded my training. But there I took tap classes, my first tap class. I took hip hop, jazz, so many different jazz classes, so many different ballet classes, so many different things. And being surrounded by so many different people and dancers, I mean, that really shifted my focus and mind about dance in a global way. That was a very exciting time for me.
So at that point, did you realize, yes, I want to be a professional dancer? Is that when that dream really began for you?
I think it did for a couple of different reasons. Like I said, there were so many new things happening, so I knew it was possible to be a professional dancer. But then I think being in that environment and working so hard, I mean, there we were taking classes. We would start maybe at 10 a.m. and then go until maybe 5 and then rehearse until 10:30 or 11 for 6 straight weeks with a performance at the end. That was my first time being in such an intensive dance environment where I danced all day, every day. And I liked it. Some people would get tired and drop out because it was very intense. But I loved the work and I loved the effort that it took to do it. That was definitely a turning point when I knew that I really wanted to pursue it as a career.
Now you travel around the world dancing. You have danced with Alvin Ailey. You danced with the Metropolitan Opera Ballet. And we're going to talk about some about the difference with modern dance and ballet. Mm-hmm. And also your own, what do you call it? The Antoine Byers Project?
Yeah, it's just a, you know, a small, I guess, company or collective that I've started. Yeah. Right.
Okay, so you also have your own company. And we're going to talk about all those pieces. But I want to slow it down a little and look at how you went from being the 15-year-old who saw that it was possible to what were the steps that got you from there to here today?
Mm-hmm. As I say, lots of blood, sweat, and tears. But, you know, I had incredible teachers and mentors from day one. Like I said, I started with the guy, Derek Whiters, who was in the ALEE company. And eventually I went to Dallas Black Dance Theater and Booker T and Dallas Ballet Center. And then a lot of different summer workshops. As a dancer, it's constantly training and pushing yourself and continuing to learn new things so that you can be the best dancer you want to be. And I trained classically when I was younger, but I started with modern dance, and a lot of people start with ballet, but I started with modern dance. So that root, that groundedness, the soul that comes with modern dance, I had that first, and then I ventured into ballet. That kind of intro into the dance world, I think, really shaped the kind of dancer I am today. Like I said, just continuing to train and really just going for it, auditioning for things that I didn't necessarily think I would get. I auditioned for Pacific Northwest Ballet, their summer program, after really training in ballet intensively for maybe 3 months, and I got in on a full scholarship. In theory, that's not supposed to happen, but it did. I start going for stuff, and things just start happening, and I had mentors that pushed me and told me it was possible, and even when I don't think it's possible, still go for it. After high school, dancers make a decision usually to try to audition for companies or to go to school, college, to continue training. At that point, I kind of knew that I didn't want to do strictly classical ballet, so I auditioned for many different programs around the country and landed at the A. Lee Fordham BFA program. And I'm actually a senior in the program right now. I graduate May 20th, very excited to walk across that stage. Our program is great in the fact that we can kind of front load our academics, and our senior year, if we've done all of our requirements, we can get professional work and still graduate on time. So my junior year, I spent it auditioning for many different companies and projects, and I booked the Metropolitan Opera Ballet as well as the Washington National Opera Ballet. But it's all a culmination of all the hard work and teachers and mentors since day one of dance for me.
So it's easy to hear, even with you saying, Antoine, that it's all the blood, the sweat, the tears, it feels almost charmed, like a charmed life. And I'm curious, I want to talk about another piece of it, because on Instagram, you quoted the stylish standout saying, quote, "So many people who are talented, brilliant, and creative don't ever manifest their breakthrough because they got stuck in the breakdown." And you wrote, "Don't get stuck in the breakdown." So I want to hear about some of the breakdowns that you pulled yourself out of.
Yes, dance is one of the hardest things out there. Physically, emotionally, spiritually. I mean, it's one of the only art forms where you are literally giving 100% of yourself. Your instrument is your body. So things that can get you in the breakdown can be injuries. You know, an injury can end a dancer's career in a split second. And, you know, I've been fortunate to where I haven't had any major injuries within my training or my career, but just, it's so hard because we want so many things in this life and in this career, and it can be very discouraging to not get them in the timeline that you think you're supposed to have them. So for me, I know a lot of my peers can sometimes give up when things don't go that way. And that's that breakdown that people get stuck in. I just remain very open. If something didn't happen, I would keep trying, but also tap into other parts of my artistry so that I could continue to grow as a person, as an artist, so that I could be an asset later on. Because there's so many dancers, but not necessarily a lot of dance jobs. You know, you're auditioning, you're in a room with 400 to 600 people for one job. It can be very discouraging. And it comes down to some of the craziest things. Sometimes you just have to fit into a costume. You have to replace the person that left right before you. Sometimes it's the person with more experience. Sometimes it's the person with the higher leg. Sometimes it's the person with the smaller waistline. There's so many different things that can get in your way and discourage you. And sometimes there's things you can't change. I'm a bigger guy, and that it took me the longest time to accept that about myself, because a lot of my peers were always so skinny and smaller than me. And I see dancers in the Ailey company like Jamar Roberts and Glenn Allen Sims who look like me. They're full, strong, big men. And that's been such an inspiration for me. But for the longest time, that got in my way, and that kind of clouded my confidence as a dancer. So there's definitely lots of different things that we as dancers have to go through and push beyond. So it takes a lot of strong mental health to do this, along with all the other technical aspects. Those have been some of my breakdowns, but you know, I'm very grateful that I moved past those. I know my body. I know what I have to do to take care of it, but I know what my body's going to be. I know that there's certain things I can't change. I don't see those as bad things. I see them as things that make me stand out and make me different and make me an asset in situations. Yeah, that's what I was alluding to in my Instagram post.
It sounds like you have a very resilient spirit, and I'm curious, have you always been that way? Do you attribute that to anyone in particular, anyone in your family, or it's just kind of how you are in the world? Have you practiced to make it, to make yourself so strong mentally?
It's definitely been a little bit of all of that, but more specifically, I've dealt with rejection in this industry. And for me, I had to step away as a form of protection for myself. I had to believe in myself first. It took time. I'm glad it sounds so great now, but I was never a Debbie Downer. But, you know, we all kind of deal with our self-image and self-confidence issues. I really at one point had to step away and say that I can't expect other people to believe in me if I don't believe in myself. And it took a minute, but now I'm at the point where I know myself, like I said, and I know myself as a dancer. I'm willing to work hard and grow, but I'm not necessarily willing to change myself to fit in a certain situation. With that being said, you know, I go to auditions and stuff, and if it's a matter of, Antoine, you have a little bit more growing to do artistically and technically, I'm totally down for that. But if I'm just not a right fit, or if I'm just changing myself in a way that I don't want to change myself, I'm not down for that. It's not the opportunity for me. That took me a minute to grasp, because comparison is the thief of joy. We all know that quote. In this industry, it's alive and well, but I try to look at the things that I have that make me special, and that's what I ride on. That's what I feed myself. So it started as kind of a shield to protect myself when something didn't go the way I want it to. Oh, well, that's fine. You know, I have this, I can do this. I might not be able to do that, but I can offer this. It was self-affirmations at one point, and things that I might have not necessarily believed, but I continued to repeat to myself. And now I believe it. You know, I've been fortunate enough to receive opportunities that help kind of remind me of that. But yeah, I view the whole industry in a different way now. And I'm grateful that I have passed that bridge, you know, in my mental state as well as my career and artistry and all that stuff.
I like how you describe that as it started as a shield to protect yourself, and now you just believe it. And I think whatever way we can come at it so that we do build that up, that mm-hmm. is important. But that's a great way to describe it, because that's what we do. A lot of times we need that. We need to at least feel in the beginning like, okay, there's this shield of protection, and then eventually mm-hmm. it just becomes who we are, like it's happened with you. So that's a great description. Now, you mentioned earlier you started in modern dance, and now you're actually doing a lot of ballet, and you're also doing modern. So talk to me a little bit about how the world of modern dance is different from ballet, and if there is one at this point that you prefer.
They're very different. Ballet is more about the up, while a lot of people describe modern as about the down. So when you see a ballet dance, I mean, the women are in point shoes and they're kind of elevated. And in modern dance, you'll see a lot of the time we dance barefoot, or in the contemporary dance world now we wear socks, and it's just more grounded and we're rooted in the earth a little bit more. So that's kind of the technical aspect that's different. But there's just a different way that dancers use their spine in ballet versus modern dance, the way that their body can articulate in different ways. As far as a preference, I love them both. I'm one of those people that genuinely can't pick a favorite dance style, because I think there's so many fun and beautiful things and beautiful challenges within all of them. I've been at the point where I've kind of trained in almost everything, and I really can't pick. I trained in West African dance. I love that. I've done tap, and there's hip hop. Ballet I love, modern, contemporary, jazz. It's all fun, and I think it all informs the dancers. And I think versatility is the name of the game these days, because any job for dancers, you have to be able to do it all. You're in a ballet company, and you're going to be doing contemporary and modern works. You're in a modern company, and you're going to be doing works that come from a ballet base. I kind of realized that early on, and I just wanted to not limit myself and put myself in a box. So I was like, you know what? I want to be able to do anything. I want to be able to walk into any room and be able to do what's asked of me. But I am, like you said, doing a lot of more balletic movement now, but also still modern and contemporary. At the Met, we work with very classical choreographers. This season, I've done work by Alexei Ratmansky, who's the resident choreographer for American Ballet Theater. I've worked with Christopher Willen and Kim Branstrup, who are both classical or neoclassical contemporary ballet choreographers. But then I'm also spent time in D.C. doing a show with Washington National Opera Ballet with Sean Curran, who is the head of department at NYU Tisch School of the Arts. And his style is definitely more downtown modern. And then I come uptown to Avonlea, where I work with Ailey too, and it's more modern, contemporary. You know, we're working with a lot of different choreographers in that setting. So, you know, that training really helped me to be an asset in all of these situations. You know, like I said earlier, I love it all. So it's nice that I can, you know, go to the Met and do something really classical and then head back five blocks down to Ailey and get grounded again and do something different.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear you describe it that way, to go and do one, like do the ballet, and then to come and get grounded again in mm-hmm. the modern. That makes sense to me now that you described it that way. It makes sense to me when I watch it, that I can see that. There's mm-hmm. definitely more of that grounded, earthy, like, feel to modern dance.
And, yeah.
And very physical. Well, they're both very physical, but there's mm-hmm. it's a different feeling, absolutely. So tell me a little, describe for me a little bit a typical day as a dancer, because it is mm-hmm. rigorous. So I just want to hear from your perspective, what does that look like? What's a typical day look like?
Yeah, I'm still in college right now. I haven't been there as much because I've had the opportunity to work professionally, but I'll give you a couple of different schedules, what a few days can look like. If I'm at the Ailey School full-time, we can start at either 8:30 or 10 o'clock with a technique class, and then we'll have 3 to 4 different technique classes in that day. So an 8:30, a 10 o'clock, and 11:30, we'll have a 30-minute lunch break, start back up at 1:30, and then we'll go into some like composition or improvisation classes at 3 o'clock or 4:30, and then we can go into rehearsals from 6 to 10:30 at night. So 12 to 14-hour days as a student. In Ailey 2, we rehearse 10 to 6. We have company class at 10, and then we rehearse 12 to 6. It's still a lot of hard work, but there's a lot less of the training aspects involved as a professional dancer. It's, for me, the way I approach class is I have so much room to grow as a technician, but at the end of the day, I have rehearsal that afternoon. So it's for me to warm up and continue to be consistent within my technique, but also develop artistry within the dance class as well. At the Met, we usually have a company class similar to Ailey 2 at 10 or 10:30 or sometimes 11, and then we can rehearse anywhere from 12:30 to 5:30, and then we have shows in the evenings there. It's a little different at the Met because it is opera. So I'm a dancer there, but we're in the operas there. So our shows start a little bit later and go a little bit longer because, you know, operas range from 3 to 6 to sometimes 8 hours. So I might not necessarily leave the theater until 10:45 or 11 at night, which has been different for me because I haven't experienced that before dancing with the operas. Every day is different because right now I'm juggling a few different things, which is really exciting. But the days, like you said, are very long, and you have to really take care of your body, make sure that you're warmed up, roll out, go to physical therapy, get massages, cross train. That stuff, we pencil all that stuff in whenever we have room in our schedule, but all of that is very important to the schedule. Oh, and eating. I like to eat in there sometimes too.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my next question, is just how you maintain the physical as well as the emotional and mental mm-hmm. energy to get through that kind of a day. So apart from the massage and the physical therapy and getting food, eating, mm-hmm. are there other things that you do to maintain your levels of energy?
Yeah, the sleep, like you said, that usually comes immediately after all of that. Yeah, and eating, to like expand on that, I think there's definitely some different misconceptions about dancers and what they eat, or rather what they don't eat. I'll speak for myself and a lot of the dancers in my community. We can eat, and we eat a lot because it's important to have enough energy to do the job. I have 3 to 4 meals a day with snacks in between, a couple of coffees. There's a lot of intake going on here because there's a lot of outtake. And rest is really important. rolling out. And what that means, I don't know if everyone knows what that means.
I don't know what that means.
So we have foam rollers, which we roll out our muscles. We have, dancers will find anything and use it to roll out. So we'll find tennis balls, baseballs, softballs. And basically what we do with that is massage our muscles throughout the day. So if you ever enter a studio, a dance studio, you'll probably see people rolling out. And that's just getting all the kinks out. Because, you know, it's not possible for us to go to massages every day, but we probably need them every day. So we found ways to personally massage ourselves. So we have lots of different tools that we get from athletic stores all the way to the food section at the grocery store to kind of keep our muscles relaxed and lubricated for the work that we have to do.
Yeah. So I want to get into your choreography actually in a minute. But first I want to ask you, because on your website, and you mentioned this earlier about being the only boy and the only person of color. And on your site, you have a video. You have several videos. And in one of the videos, it's a dance. And it's a dance between a young black man and a white NYPD cop or a New York Police Department cop. So I want to ask you how you see the role of dance as a tool for social change.
Right. It is a tool for social change, absolutely. Mr. Ailey, Alvin Ailey, he believed that dance came from the people and should be delivered back from the people. So that's how I view it. And side note, it's very important for dancers to live outside of the studio, because my job as a dancer is to get on stage and hopefully communicate with people in the audience. And I have to live life to do that. For me, I definitely think it can be used for social change. I've been grateful to have been a part of different processes and projects like the one you mentioned. That one was choreographed by Elena Vazantaris, and that was a direct reflection of police brutality. And I was so honored to be a part of that. And it got picked up by lots of different news outlets, and it's been seen by, you know, more than a million people. That was a very emotional process to be in, but even speaking to people who saw it, they were definitely touched by it. Different works can do different things. There's a lot of dances that are very literal and obvious, such as the one we saw. I mean, there was a police officer and a black male. You can put two of those people in a room and there's already a story. But there's a lot of choreographers that create works in a lot of different abstract ways that you kind of have to think on. I think that whether people do it on purpose or not, dance is reflective of the times, because as you create, you are creating from your experience. So I definitely think that all dance is pretty much reflective of, you know, what's going on outside the dance studio.
I have a question for you in terms of, like you said, that Alvin Ailey had said, you know, it comes from the people, it belongs to the people, it should be for the people, the dance. Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I wonder about with that is, going to see a dance performance is not an inexpensive outing in a lot. So I'm wondering what you think about that piece of it, just as far as the accessibility.
So, I mean, I'll start from the base of it. It's expensive to attend performances, but it's expensive to train. I'm the product of a scholarship fund. Training can be $20 a class, taking 2 to 3 classes a day. If there weren't people that believed in me and who helped me fund my summers and my year-round programs, and if there wasn't a place like Booker T that was a public magnet school that I could attend for free and get world-class training, I wouldn't be able to do it. I think it can be very classist in ways that some people, it's not accessible for people to train. So that's why I think it's really important that so many people are starting initiatives and funds to get more people into dance, into ballet, from all different parts of the country and walks of life. As far as the attending performances, I absolutely agree. I think it can be a little outrageous that some of the shows are so expensive, but a lot of companies and theater houses offer student discounts, and they also offer, you know, different programs to allow other people to come into the theater. So I know that Lincoln Center, we have 30 under 30, and that's also to bring in younger audiences to the theater, but also make it more accessible to people. How do I feel about it? I think it kind of sucks. I mean, at the Met Opera, an orchestra ticket is $400+.
Yeah.
So I know that me, as a young black boy who, you know, might love opera or who might even come for the dance aspect of it, that wouldn't be accessible. But the Met has done lots of things that we have free screenings outside at Lincoln Center. You know, we have to keep the lights on, but I think it's also important because the lights can't stay on if we don't continue to nurture the next generation of dance and make it accessible for people. I think it's all about balance, but yeah, I definitely, I see it and I think it can be a little difficult, but I do appreciate the companies and organizations that are trying to make it more accessible for all different people.
Yeah, I do too. And I think, you know, you had a video on a Facebook page of these young girls, young Black dancers, maybe, I don't know, 10, 12, 13 years old, on The View. And, mm-hmm. I can't remember the name of the woman, the dancer who is now retired. She was on
Carmen de Lavallade.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So beautiful. And so she was crying and Whoopi Goldberg asked her why she's crying. And she said, because art saves lives. Mm-hmm. And even just thinking about it now, it makes me cry again because I cried when yeah. I watched it the first time. And I thought, it is so much more than just, oh, wow, it's amazing to watch a dancer on stage. Like, we need, not just for ourselves as people, but we need that diversity in the art world because we need to see that reflected back. And yes. Who knows what it can do for a young person. Like it, like she said, it changes lives.
Yeah, so, she said it literally. There was a guy on death row, I believe, and he'd start taking painting classes. And he was like, I wish I would have, he said, I wouldn't be there if I would have had this earlier. I don't know much about his situation, but he probably didn't come from a place that encouraged that or, you know, let him know that that kind of stuff was possible. That's something I'm also really big on is educating the next generation. But yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Is that something that you do? So you have the Antoine Byers Project, which is your company. Is that a part of your company? Let's talk a little bit about what it is that you're choreographing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's relatively new. I created a work in the fall that ended up getting a lot of attention and people really appreciated it. And we've been asked to perform the work all around New York at different festivals. So from there, I was like, okay, I can actually do this. You know, it's nice to be a part of someone else's vision, but it's also nice to kind of create and manifest your own vision sometimes. So the project, the reason I named it the Antoine Byers Project, I mean, I'm Antoine Byers and this is my project. So it's kind of like a company, but it's a lot more free. It's not full time. It's not something that is going to be the next Alvin Ailey. I don't plan on it to be that, but if I have free time and I have some dancers that I'm interested in working with, I love having the opportunity to get into the studio and create. For me, what that's meant is I'm actually working on a installation, interactive performance for the fall that stemmed from a work that I choreographed called Wisdom Within Our Very Flesh. And that piece was created to analyze the psychosomatic connections within the human body. So how the mind and the body work together and sometimes how they don't work together. There's five women in the piece and it turned into a piece about women's rights and women and how they're viewed in the world. I was like, okay, I'm okay with that. Because the way I see it is you can create whatever you want to create about whatever you want to create, but however it's perceived and however people take it and what they do with the art is what it is. And that's honestly what matters. So I'm actually happy that people got that from the works. There's lots of stuff that I want to do. And I just kind of wanted to put it under an umbrella. So there was a name that was attached to it. And it kind of all made sense. Within that, I teach around the country. Usually whenever I'm traveling, I try to always make it a point to teach because that is a big part of what inspired me. When I was in DC, I had the opportunity to teach at Washington Ballet. I go back and teach at Booker T and I assist and teach at Dallas Black. And I've also had the opportunity to do it at the Ailey School while I've been here. Teaching is a big part of it. And there's some other initiatives that I'm starting and those are also to be announced where I'm literally want to give back to the next generation of dancers and specifically dancers that look like me and come from similar situations that I came from to kind of remind them, if not let them know that it is possible to be the next huge famous dancer or not. But most importantly, you know, achieve your dreams and your goals, whatever those may be.
That's
great. Keep your eyes out for that, everybody, because it's coming.
That's so great. That's so great. And you said with Wisdom Within Our Very Flesh, you said what it ended up meaning to the public. Mm-hmm. And I know it's taken from a quote, there is wisdom within our very flesh if only we can come to our senses and feel it. What does that mean for you?
So my creative process, I receive inspiration in different ways. In this one, I knew musically what I wanted to do, and I knew that I wanted five women, and I knew who those five women were. So I did a little bit more research and brainstorming and I was like, what can I create a piece about? And so then I landed on the mind and body connection. So that quote, I found it online. It was by Elizabeth Behnke. I think that's how you pronounce her name.
I'm glad and you said it because I wasn't sure how to say it.
I hope I said it right. But yes. So for me, what that means is that our body's constructed of, we have our brain, but there's nerves and there's energy and there's lots of stuff running through our bodies. We have the sense of touch and smell and sight, and we can hear. And there's wisdom within all of our muscles and tendons and bones. It's all in there if we can only access it. Because I think that the mind and the body are all connected in that, how women are viewed in society, women of color, women period, how they're viewed and how conditioning has kind of led to that. And where the body falls into that. I think there, you know, a lot that we can talk about, but that's kind of what the work has developed into. And it's still a thought bubble. Whenever the work is performed, a lot of the time we have a talk back, and it's really interesting to see what some of the audience members say about it.
Yeah, that's great. And just as a woman, I think it's a very powerful thing, because I know that connecting with our bodies can, as we get older, actually become something quite scary, because we can feel so vulnerable in our bodies. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to come back into them in a way that is empowered and strong and just in a way that we're able to hear and mm-hmm. be attentive to what it's saying is important. And so I think I appreciate at least that aspect of it. And it sounds like a very powerful project. And I loved watching the video of it. So, yeah. I want to switch gears as we come towards the end. I want to switch gears quite a bit here and just talk briefly about social media. And the reason I want to do that is because you do make your work accessible to people, and you have tapped into social media in a way that makes dance a lot more accessible and is also a potential tool for dancers and other artists who are wanting to do more of their art but feel limited by the exposure. And then you really have used Instagram in particular to show how you can expand your exposure with Instagram and social media. So I want to ask you about that, because you said in an interview that Instagram is great now because you can create a career from it. We are called influencers. So how has Instagram helped you with your career?
Definitely with exposure. For instance, you know, I dance at the Met right now. People that see me are either people that live in New York and come to the Met who can afford those tickets, or people that fly in who can afford those tickets. But Instagram is free. If you have a smartphone, you can download it. If you have access to the internet, you can download it. And you can see my work and, you know, lots of work from other artists. For me, I fell out with social media. It was kind of overwhelming and consuming a lot of my time and energy. But once I saw the power that it really had, I always tell this story because it's the reason I continue to post consistently. I have a schedule. I'm constantly trying to reinvent and create and, you know, show art in a different way on my social platforms. It's because there was a boy from South Africa, and he learned ballet from YouTube.
Me
on Instagram and sends me videos. And, you know, I send him critiques and tips, because right now in his current situation, that's all he can get. You know, whether he grows up to be the next, you know, Baryshnikov or Nureyev, that's not really important to me. But my art and people who are creating art and making it accessible like me is what he can touch right now. So have I been to Africa? No. You know, when will I go to Africa? I don't know. But if I wouldn't have had a platform such as Instagram, this connection wouldn't have been made. And since then, it's, you know, I have lots of young dancers from around the world and the country who reach out and interact with me. And I love it, because I didn't necessarily have that. I had people that were close to me, but it's nice to be able to reach so many different people on these social platforms. So as far as career-wise, I've gotten many a gig from social media. A lot of the music videos and dance films and commercials and short films and photo shoots that people see on my social platforms were initiated through an Instagram DM. I've been invited to many parts of the world to collaborate with different artists, and you can see my art being projected in Japan and in different countries, all because someone found me on Instagram. So once I noticed the power in that, I definitely hopped on board, because I'm interested in dancing on stage, but also in the different mediums that my work can be received. So I'm new to the game of Instagram, but I'm intrigued to see where all of this stuff goes. You know, I'm still interacting with lots of different people, and it's fun. And, you know, different brands reach out to me and say, hey, can I send you a product? And if you do a post about it, I'll compensate you. Or sometimes they just want to send me things to be featured on my account. And I'm very picky with what I post because I have a brand that I have to uphold, and I have people that follow me and expect certain content. But if I feel that it can help my followers or allow them to see a new product that could help them in their career and in their life, I'm definitely on board to do it. You know, most of my work comes in the form, like I said, of working with different brands with photo shoots and commercials. Dance is like all the craze right now. Everyone's trying to throw on a pair of point shoes and do commercials and stuff. I'm glad they're actually using dancers now, because not all the beautiful celebrities can actually do the ballet, but that's a different conversation. But yeah, I think dance is very popular in that way right now. So it's opened up a lot of different opportunities for me to work with brands and get exposure, but also hopefully inspire other people and then receive some money as well.
So yeah, that's important.
Great. Yeah, definitely. In the dance world, it's great to be paid, because it is for an industry and a career that you work so hard at. It's crazy, and it blows my mind how we're the least paid in the world of the arts. But that's also could possibly be another question or another discussion. Yeah.
Now there's like so many avenues we could go, and we're really coming to the end here. And I'm interviewing you because of Instagram. I mean, that's how I found you, was through Instagram initially.
See,
it works. It absolutely works. Absolutely. And I've connected with a lot of other artists that way too. Some really fantastic connections all through Instagram. That's my favorite one of all the platforms.
Same. I love it.
Yeah. Now, okay, so a few more questions. This is, what advice would you give to someone who says, oh my God, you got to be kidding me, there's like 400 people competing for one dance position, or someone who just wants to go into a world of dance or art? What would you say to that person to encourage them to do it, or just what advice would you give them?
Well, like you said, there's 400 people going into that audition room, but there's still only one you. And that's the advice that I tell myself, but also what I would tell anyone else, is that no one else can be you, period. No one else can do that. So you have to understand and truly believe that you are special, and that keep going to those cattle call auditions with 400 people. Keep going after it, because that one person they're looking for could and probably will one day be you. And that's the advice that I would say to anyone, you know, going after this position. It's not going to be easy, but I feel like a lot of us wouldn't do it if it was easy. Dance is not easy. If you want, you know, something easy, this is not the career for you. With that being said, you know, embrace the hustle. Be inspired by the hard work, because that's out of love, that's why we do it. But definitely, sometimes you have to go back to square one and ask yourself, you know, why you do this. And then if it's still the career for you, then keep going to those auditions, keep putting in the work, because it does pay off in some way, shape, or form. And one of my mentors, J.R. Glover, who's the director of Jacob's Pillow, the education department, she said to me in a taxi ride from an audition, she said she truly believes that there's a place for everyone in the dance world. So whether that's taking an open class at your local studio or being the next Misty Copeland, there's a place for everyone in this dance world. And I think you have to believe that, and then you just have to find your place.
Yeah. And actually, because you just mentioned Misty Copeland, that just to reiterate what you're saying. So Misty Copeland, amazing Black ballerina, a principal ballerina. And I saw the movie made about her on Netflix, and one of the things that is so powerful about going for it, if you're willing to, like you say, embrace the hustle and really do it, is what was so moving for me in that documentary was when she performed her first performance, how many people of color showed up to that performance who would never have gone to ballet because they didn't see themselves reflected
exactly
back. And again, it's just like, it makes me emotional, because it's so important to not limit ourselves by our stories, because we don't know what difference we're going to make in someone else's life. So, yeah.
Absolutely agree, for sure. And that's why exposure and education and all that is so important. And, you know, MISTI and a lot of other organizations are creating initiatives and doing things to get art to the people. So I'm trying to do as much as I can in that as well. I mean, if I wouldn't have been exposed, I would not be where I am today. And I don't know what I'd be doing. There were things I liked, but the passion that I have for dance, I don't know what else I would have been as passionate about.
Fantastic. So I have just one last question at the end. But before I ask that and ask if there's anything else that you want to add, I want to make sure that people can find you and see your dancing and hopefully see you live. And mm-hmm. So to do that, go to Antoine Byers, which is A-N-T-U-A-N, Byers, BYERS.com. Or as we've talked about, you can find him on Instagram, which is a great place to see incredible pictures of you and just to be able to follow you and see what you're up to. Before we finish, then, there's one thing I'll do, and then I'll ask you a last question. And the first thing is a gratitude. And I have two gratitudes. One is for you, which I'll express in a minute, or it's about you, which I'll express in a minute. The first one, though, is for you, which is I've said this to you, not during this interview, but outside of the interview, that dance has always been my favorite art form. And when I was little, my mom, she loves all art, and she would take me to the opera and I would fall asleep, and she would take me to the museums and I would sit there on the benches in the middle so bored waiting for her to finish. But she would take me to dance and I loved it. I grew up just loving first ballet and then modern dance. And so it's just such, I'm so grateful to be able to talk to you and learn more about dancing from a dancer, professional dancer. And then just a gratitude about you is there's two things. One is you really, like, your heart is so open. You can see, like, you just share yourself. You come and you share yourself and you just put yourself out there. And I'm really grateful for that. And then I'm really appreciative of the work that you're doing, both now professionally somewhat before you graduate, so doing the professional work you're doing, but also the work to give back and to inspire others, this next generation of dancers, and bringing all of that, bringing your experience, your wisdom, your ability into their world to inspire them to maybe grow up and do who knows what in the art world, pursue who knows what, but really go for their dream. So thank you for that.
Thank you for those kind words. I mean, it really does mean the world to me, because that's what I'm here to do. I mean, like I said, I mean, I'm a product of people believing in me and giving gifts to me to help me succeed. So it's my responsibility to give back. I wasn't given the gift of dance for me. I don't believe that. I think it was truly for me to use my art form and my voice as a dancer to inspire other people, to make them feel happy, to sometimes make them feel sad. Art has the power to do that. And, you know, I'm really grateful for that. And thank you so much for those kind words. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. So anything, first of all, anything that I may have missed, not thought to ask about the life of a dancer, your life as a dancer?
I think we touched everything. One exciting thing, I've been apprenticing, like I said, with Ailee 2 this season. And I auditioned yesterday and I got the full-time position. It's very fresh news. So yes, I will be starting full-time in July with Ailee 2. So
fantastic.
That's one thing everyone can look out for. Maybe coming to a city near you. We tour internationally and domestically. So yes, so hopefully I'll get to meet you, Daphne. Hopefully
yes, that would be great.
Some of your followers from the podcast.
That would be great. Well, the first dance my daughter went to was Alvin Ailee. So It's
a great first dance to see.
It was. Oh, my gosh. So that's great. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm very excited.
And the last question that I ask then is, with the creativity habit is I believe that everyone is an artist, everyone is creative, and everyone has something to make. And given that, why do you think it's so important? And you have touched on this a little, but why do you think it's important that each person make their thing?
Because we all, like you said, we all have something to share and create. And it's important to tap into that. Because it can be a release for some people. As Carmen D'Avila said, it can save lives, quite literally. And I think there's something that the arts does internally that nothing else can do. And I'm so fortunate I get to do it every day. So it's a gift that I wish everyone could experience, at least sometimes, if not every day. I think it's very important to find your art and find that release and nurture that creativity habit. As much as you can. I think it's very important. And it starts with education and accessibility. But yes, I absolutely agree.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Antoine. It's been a true joy.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been my pleasure.